roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Mountain's Edge, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz, our ace co-host. And with us, as always, is Max, the Jack Russell Terrier, who always stares at me when I start the intro. He kind of perks up, Goz, and he's been part of the team
for the last show
for the last 6 months, if you think about it.
He goes back to Tag Radio.
Yeah, he's got perfect attendance. Folks, it's our UFC 253 wrap-up show. We're going to talk about the pay-per-view that took place this past Saturday. We had a blast, by the way, hosting a watch-along, a UFC 253 watch-along on Sportscaster. Hopefully you guys joined us for some of that. If you want to take a peek and see what the hell a watch-along is, you can always go to our channel at any point in time, www.sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. Just give it like 5 minutes and you can kind of get a feel for what we're doing. We're basically hanging out, watching the fights along with y'all, and we're going to be doing another one at the end of October for UFC 254. So check that out. There's no E in Caster, so www.sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. Also joining us on the program, John Morgan, all the way down in Abu Dhabi. We're going to connect with him, and we'll cover those big fights, those big storylines, as I don't believe he'll be part of our spinning back click crew, or our click, I should say, this time. So we might as well get his thoughts since he's down there, and he's basically quarantined in his room. And you know he loves to talk MMA, so should have a fun chat with him. And, of course, we'll cover the latest news nuggets and all the fun facts and figures from the fight card. Buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday, September 27th.
Damas y caballeros, hablemos MMA con Danny Segura.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura here. Just wanted to drop in and tell you about a new show coming to MMA Junkie. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language podcast dedicated to all things professional fighting. On this show, we'll be covering the biggest news and topics of MMA, plus highlighting the most relevant stories happening in the growing Latin American scene. Hablemos MMA will also feature interviews with some of the best fighters, coaches, personalities, and experts in the game. You can find us every Monday on your favorite podcasting platform, starting July 27th. Talk to you then.
Goz, this past week was fun. Not only was it fight week, it was our birthday weeks. I know we're going through a tough time of the pandemic, but did you have a fun birthday week, a fun birthday?
Yeah, it was actually one of my favorite ones, I think, looking back now.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. Thank you to everybody for the birthday wishes. And also keep an eye out for a very cool birthday video that we did for Goz that he posted on his Facebook page that then I posted on my Facebook page. I'm sure Goz has some friends that I don't have and vice versa. And maybe when we get a chance, Goz, maybe we can post it somewhere else. I thought it was pretty cool. Some MMA people in there and some of our friends and family.
I'm trying to figure out how I can post it, because like if I put it on YouTube, it gets taken down. If I Facebook has been pretty cool where they've left it alone, mm-hmm. because it has music to it. So I'm trying to figure out. But yeah, I'd like to do that. And that was really, really cool. I want to thank everybody involved. George, Juliet, Laura, they put that together. And then Laura's brother, his real name is Alan, but he goes by Alambrex, which mm-hmm. I like calling him that better.
It is a pretty cool name.
It is kind of cool. Yeah. And so he has a really cool YouTube channel and a Twitch channel as well, I think. So once I get all that information together and how I can post that video, then I think I'll do that.
How old is that cat, like, by the way?
He's pretty young. He's the youngest. I would imagine early 30s, maybe.
Okay.
But the reaction video would probably be good too, you know? So that's what I want to figure out, how I can post all that together.
The reaction video.
Oh, so we recorded me watching it.
We did tape you on the StreamYard. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe you can put all that together and we can figure it out. Mm-hmm. I think Twitter is a little bit more flexible than YouTube, but you should chat with Alambrix because he does that for a living. He's got a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Alambrix. Check it out if you want to, you know, if you're into music. Rammstein, I guess, is something he's big on. And
that's his Strokes. That's his favorite band. Yeah. He's actually met them, become friends with them.
Oh, cool.
But he would take their songs and remix them.
Yeah.
And so he kind of did something a little, something different.
Right, yeah. Right. All right. So thank you again for all your thoughts and wishes. It's been a fun birthday week. And this is a late Sunday taping for us. So some of you are going to get your early delivery. It's like getting the news, except instead of 5 a.m. you're gonna get it the night before, and because I know it's already Monday for some people, and everybody's been talking about the fights. They were great fights. Let's start at the top. Why don't we bring in John Morgan? That was a good time.
The Sneak is a true crime podcast from For the Win in USA Today, and this season is on a surfing champion whose life took a violent, tragic turn.
Within 30 seconds, they're both dead.
The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is out July 29th, wherever you get podcasts.
Joining us now on the hotline is our very own John Morgan, all the way in Abu Dhabi, 11 hours ahead. It's already Monday. What's up?
Chilling, man. Just getting this whole five-week stretch underway here in on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi, but it's good.
John, are you a wreck, or has your body at least equalized by now?
No, I'm a wreck, man. Unfortunately, the last time I had the same issue. It's just you can't ever really get fully on schedule one way or the other because – you know, the fights are at night. You know, I think the first fight last night was, we left at 2 a.m. And then the first fight was at 3 a.m. our time. And, you know, by the time we wrap up, it's around midday. But, you know, then you got to wake up during the day to get, like, COVID tests and stuff like that during the week. So you just never really get on one schedule or the other. So it's a little crazy, man. But, you know, hey, we got to do what we got to do. We're just lucky to be working, lucky to be a part of a sport that's pushing on, right?
Yeah, so conceivably, we could apply that to the fighters themselves. They've had a little bit of a rough go of going through what you went through. They went on the same flight, 15 hours nonstop. You know, they also had to acclimate to the same type of time zones, and it sounds like you're all going through the same type of quarantines and testing.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, it's funny because when we first came over here for the first stretch of Fight Island events, you know, the thing I was thinking about in terms of what would affect the fights was the heat, right? I mean, it's really hot here. It's really humid here. And when you go back to, I believe it was UFC 242 with Habib and Poirier, man, the venue where the fights were at, it was incredibly hot. I mean, it was super, super hot, super, super humid to the point that, you know, we started talking to some of the early prelim fighters. And they said that they had to adjust. Like, they realized, you had to tone down your warm-ups or maybe not even warm up at all because you would get too tired. There was too much going on. So I was thinking about that a whole lot the first time we came here. But then you get in the venue, and if you happen to notice, you know, obviously everybody sees me wear my blue shirt that I wear for my son. I put a jacket on top of it, man. You have to wear a jacket. It's so cold in there. So the temperature is not an issue. It's not an issue at all. If anything, it's not, you know, it's not hot, it's cold, but it's sleep. So I've been telling people, you know, if you're a better or you're a fantasy picker or whatever, and you're looking for some of those intangibles, try to look for social media patterns. Try to look for when people are sleeping, when they're not sleeping, what they're doing, because that's the problem, honestly, is if you're able to get on the right sleep pattern or not, because you're going to be fighting at like 4 a.m. So, it's a little weird. And most of the fighters won't talk about it too much because they don't want to make excuses or they're trying to tell themselves that it's okay. But sleeping here, the sleep pattern is a problem.
Yeah, look, I've seen the whole 5-star location. It's beautiful. It's top of the notch. Well, I said it already. 5-star. But I have noticed a few of those things you said on social media and then talking with you as well. Like, I know it hasn't been the easiest bullet to dodge. But I was telling Goes, after kind of seeing and hearing everything, I was telling Goz, man, if I'm on the Khabib card or even the one before that, I might just say, when's the soonest plane, man? I'll take my 2 weeks if I have to get down there, because it's just, I don't know, these times seem so awkward, because I think even you and John Anik had a different way of sleeping. I think he was more of, let me see, you were going to bed 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. my time, and it seemed like he was, you know, because there's 24 hours in a day, so there's like 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, but that other 8 hours was different from yours, because I saw him at 7:15 a.m. going, time to go to bed, you know, and I was thinking, either John's pushing himself, or John's on another schedule even from John Anik.
Yeah, no, it's challenging. That's actually a great idea that I hadn't thought about, because my understanding is there are flights leaving every single Friday from Las Vegas to come over here, so all the fighters each week, they leave on Friday, which puts them in on Saturday, and they have to do their 48-hour quarantine, and they're out of quarantine on Monday. So you're right. If you're on that card, on that pay-per-view card, you know, maybe come in a week or two earlier, it's really not a bad idea. I don't know that it would necessarily cost you anything, or because the hotel – now, I'm not at the W. I'm at a different hotel, but the W is where the fighters and the staff is, and I think that they're the only people there. So I don't know that it would necessarily cost you or cost the UFC anything to book a room, as long as they have the space. But you're right. That exactly what you said. It's just the sleep. I saw the same thing from Anik, and I'm like, why are you going to bed at 7:15? But, you know, think about this. Once he's off air, he's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people forget sometimes. For me, once the fights are over, that's almost when things start. You know what I mean? Like, because then you got the post-fight press conference, and you got to process that video, process everything. You know, so we have more work to do. So, yeah, for me, what I did before the fight was I went and had lunch, and, you know, I may have slipped in a frosty beverage or two. And then and then I went to sleep for about 7 hours. I woke up at 1 a.m., took a shower, drank some coffee, you know, took the 2 a.m. shuttle over. So, yeah, I'm telling you, it's weird. But the sleep schedule is the biggest challenge of being successful here, you know, as a fighter, of course. I mean, as a media member, whatever, just bear it. You just do what you got to do, you know what I mean? But when you're talking about athletes trying to be in peak performance, the sleep schedule is a problem.
John, what about that flight over here? We've heard a couple funny stories here from different flights down there. A couple where fighters who were going to fight each other are almost practically sitting in the same row. What have the flights down there been like for you? And did this one have anything humorous?
Yeah, you know what? It's not too bad. I mean, it's funny because, first of all, it's about a 14 and a half, 15-hour flight, which to be honest, is actually great, because you have to be on the charter that the UFC has, right? So because that's part of the bubble, right? You take a test to get on the plane. Once you pass the COVID test, you jump on there, and that's essentially the start of the bubble, because once you arrive in Abu Dhabi, you know, everything's, you know, you're ushered away, you're sent, you take another test. Once you land, you quarantine right away. But basically, the flight is part of the quarantine. So in the past, I had come to Abu Dhabi before for UFC fights, but, you know, just booked my own commercial travel. And, you know, I mean, the junkie budget is fine. You know, it's good. They, you know, they take care of it, but we're trying to save a little money where we can. So normally, you know, it was always the cheap flight was like Vegas to JFK, JFK to Heathrow, Heathrow to here. Now, you know, so by the time you make it, it's like 24, 25 hours of travel. So now it's like 14, 15 hours of travel. So it's not that bad. The plane is socially distanced because, again, it's part of the bubble. So, like, they put the fighters in first class, or at least the headliners and the tops in first class, staff and the rest of the card in business. And then, you know, jokers like us in the media, we're all in coach. But at least we have like a whole row. So I have like three or four seats to myself. So you can lay down in three or four seats or whatever. So the flight honestly is not that bad. It's just long. And, you know, whether you can sleep or not, I think helps you a lot as well. Because I know some people can't sleep on a plane. Me, I'm out, man. I can pass out. But, yeah, it's funny. Like you said, you know, everybody's on one plane. So, it's you know, unless you're coming from another country, you're probably a row or two away from your opponent. But, you know, you guys know the game, man. Fortunately, you know, as much as there's animosity and stuff like that in fights, everybody realizes, you know, you're not getting paid if you punch somebody on a plane. You're getting paid if you punch somebody in a cage. So you wait till Saturday night/Sunday morning.
All right, John. So let's talk about UFC 253. Pretty historic in many ways. Let's start at the top. Israel Adesanya. This was one of those historical fights. They don't happen too often where two undefeated number ones and number twos meet up. And it had a little, well, yeah, it had its fair share of animosity, minus that little friendly handshake early in the week. It was everything we would want. Dana White said, look, this is the one I'm looking forward to throughout the whole year. Except one guy came to fight, you know, bask in greatness, you know, to accomplish greatness. And that was Israel Adesanya. And Paulo Costa, who I believe just wanted to maybe, he took too long to feel things out. And then I guess at some point he was going to explode. But by then, you know, damage to the leg, damage to the chin. And then I think just some sort of a mental block, man. I don't know. It was just a poor performance from Paulo Costa, but a lot of it had to do with Israel Adesanya. What did you think as this fight was unfolding and not going the way that you, me, goes, and a lot of people thought?
Yeah, it was interesting, right? So at first, you know, when Paulo started fairly slowly, I thought to myself, well, you know, he's prepping himself for a 5-round fight. You know, maybe the goal was to, like, hey, let's just ride out this first round. Let's conserve our energy. Let's study Israel Adesanya, because, you know, nobody moves like he does. Nobody does what he does. So, you know, you want him to get a feel for what he's doing. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. I'm cool with that. But then, as you said, he starts taking damage to the legs, and you start realizing, like, dude, you can't take that. Like, you can't just absorb all this in the first round and move on. So I started thinking, as the round's unfolding, like, dude, you got to make an adjustment or you're going to be in real trouble here. And I think that's what played out. And as you said, I don't know if it was a mental block, if it was, you know, the enormity of the moment. As you said, it was promised to be so amazing. It was built up to be so big. You know, did he choke, for lack of a better term? I mean, is that what happened here? I'm not sure. Or, you know, was it the game plan? And I'd like to believe it wasn't the game plan, because if it was the game plan, it was a poor one. You know, why are you leading with kicks? You know, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, you're facing one of the most gifted kickboxers we've ever seen in the octagon. Why are you leading with kicks? There were a couple times where Paulo did cut off the cage, and he did have Israel, you know, trapped up against the fence. And rather than unleashing those vicious punches that we saw in previous fights, he kind of backed up to the center and reset. And I just didn't get it. So it sucks a little bit, because I don't want to take away from Israel Adesanya's performance. It was so good, man. He came out there, you know, throwing feints, getting Paulo to bite and you know, studying him. I don't know, man. Paulo just didn't engage the way I expected him to engage. So I don't want to take away and act like Israel's performance wasn't good, because it was fantastic. I mean, Israel Adesanya is the real deal. If you thought after the Yoel Romero fight that he was lacking for some reason, I mean, he's not. He's that good. But I just think Paulo didn't deliver the way that we expected him to, what we thought we were going to see. And, you know, again, whether that was poor planning, poor execution, a mental block, I don't know. He didn't come to the post-fight press conference. I didn't get a chance to see his team yesterday after we finished. I'm anxious to, you know, hopefully, you know, run into Captain Eric or talk to somebody and find out what they think happened. But you're right. It's a shame, because for whatever reason, Paulo didn't deliver what we expected him to deliver. But let's not take away from Israel.
Exactly. And so, perfect transition. Israel Adesanya, you could tell he was excited, but it looked like he was also unleashing on fans, unleashing on media. He definitely carried a chip on his shoulder, and I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the Yoel Romero fight. Went back and looked at some of the highlights from Yoel Romero. I remember the Yoel Romero fight. I looked at the scores of the Yoel Romero fight, and John, I still feel like if he just at least accepted part of the blame, you know, all we have eyes and we describe what we see. I don't think we wake up wanting to taint any fighter, you know, whatsoever. But could you ever really figure out, was it anger with maybe just a certain amount of trolls? Was it actual media that maybe ripped him apart? You know, I don't read every website or anything like that. I stick to pretty much the Junkie brand. But what was it with that chip on his shoulder that he had that he just kind of seemed to keep letting it go for the last 24 hours since the fight?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I'm kind of the same way. You know, I try to monitor as much as I can, but I don't see everything. And you know, when he spoke out against the media at the end, now it's not the first time he's spoken out against the media. And I was saying this on the MMA Roadshow that to be honest, his backlash that he closed his press conference with, I actually agree with. It's actually advice that I give to journalists that are asking me for, like, hey, what would you say growing up? I always say, do not say anything. You know, don't say, don't write, don't tweet, don't publish in any form anything that you wouldn't say to somebody's face. Like, it's entirely fair to criticize. That is our job. We watch thousands and thousands and thousands of fights, and it's fine for us to say some are good, some are bad, some performances, you know, could have changed. But don't say anything you wouldn't say to somebody's face, you know, because they are putting their lives on the line, their health on the line, all those things. So, you know, just they deserve a certain amount of respect just for the fact of what they're doing. But I was actually talking to Oscar Willis from the Mac Life, and he was sharing something that I think it was the boys from Submission Radio down in Australia that had said, which is that the New Zealand media is especially critical of Israel Adesanya, you know, I guess because he's one of their own. I don't know, they cover him maybe a little bit more in depth, or at least they cover him, you know, more frequently. It's you know, they want to get their headlines on that guy because that's their guy. And so I guess they're a little more critical of him, because I haven't seen a lot of critiques in the MMA media, you know, as you said, outside of the Romero fight, where they both shared in the blame of that not being exciting. But I mean, I do think it was Romero more than anything, but, you know, you had to give some of it to Israel Adesanya as well. But, you know, that's not the criticism that I saw of that fight wasn't enough to elicit the type of response that I saw. So I think maybe it might have been some of his domestic media in New Zealand that maybe might have angered him a little bit.
John, the performance that he had, what I've been trying to figure out is, did he just kind of upgrade to greatness, or has he always had this? Because he's got to be getting better with every fight, but this to me still, as good as he is, it seemed like a different level of Israel Adesanya. Even his body seemed a little bit more filled out. Just his reaction, he had almost no fear in the fight. And I guess what I want to get to is, I'm one of the guys that whenever I would hear John Jones say, or Israel Adesanya mention each other's names, I would cringe. I just didn't want to see it. But I'll tell you what, after that performance, I wouldn't mind seeing it. You know, I don't want to say now, but eventually I wouldn't mind getting to it, because it's a more competitive match for me in my eyes after this fight than it was a couple fights ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's intriguing, right? I'm kind of the same way. Like, for me, like, when John Jones, well, I say when he was in the middle of his run, I mean, I guess he technically is still in the middle of his run, even though he's given up the belt. But I always, you know, he has to go to heavyweight. He has to go to heavyweight. I'm like, why does he have to go to heavyweight? Like, I don't understand that concept. If you're dominant at a weight class because you've honed your body to be the absolute best on the planet at this one weight, why, in order to prove your greatness, do you have to go somewhere else? I don't think you do. I think what you have to do is just beat every man in your path that's even remotely close to you, and prove that you're the greatest. I love that. So I was never one of these big, you know, oh, you got to go to another weight class. You got to go to another weight class. But I'm telling you right now, to start, I do think Adesanya has always had this in him. I just think that he, in some ways, as you said, he's taken it to another level. Like, he's confident in himself. He knows who he is. He feels there's no need to prove anything to anybody. He's doing what he does. I mean, he's beat the scariest guys on the planet. He wants Jared Cannonier next. And I do think the Jared Cannonier fight would be interesting. You know, I guess you've got Till out there. I guess you've got Hermanson out there. I mean, you've got a couple names, but nobody that you're like, oh, that's a fight that if we don't see, you know, we've lost something. Like, oh, my gosh, we have to put these two guys together. No disrespect to Jack Hermanson. No disrespect to Darren Till. Love them both. But I don't feel like, oh, my gosh, I've lost something if I don't see these fights happen. But Adesanya and John Jones in the same cage would be pretty damn amazing. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, Jones obviously came out and started tweeting at the new 205 champ. So is he moving to heavyweight or not? You know, I don't know that I'm necessarily convinced that this heavyweight move is going to happen. So if it's not going to happen, you know, if it's going to happen and he's going to bulk out his frame and he's going to, you know, make sure he's a muscular 235 or whatever. But yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But if Jones is staying at 205, man, to put these two guys together would be pretty fantastic, man. These long, lean, rangy type fighters, man, it'd be fun to watch.
John, I hate to compare this guy to so many people, but, you know, when we're talking greatness, it's kind of something that we do a lot. When you look at Israel Adesanya and his little run that he's going on here, the skins that he has on his wall, compared to maybe what Anderson Silva went through early on, John Jones went through early on, how do you compare those? Where is he at in that regard?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, in order to go to great, it's funny because, as you said, the comparison is there to Anderson Silva. Obviously, they've competed. Obviously, it's the same weight class. And Adesanya doesn't mind the comparisons to a degree, but he also says, look, I don't want to be the next Anderson Silva. I want to be, you know, the first Israel Adesanya. And I think that's respectful of him to do. But, yeah, man, there's going to be comparisons, and Israel has a chance of doing that. You know, in talking about this fight, it's funny. I wrote a piece beforehand where I was saying, listen, it is rare that two undefeated guys go at it for a title. I mean, the only other time it's happened in modern UFC history was Machida and Evans, you know, back in the day. And that was like, what, 2009? So we're talking about like 11 years ago. It's been 11 years since we had two undefeated guys face off. Now, in retrospect, you know, when we look at this as historical, I don't know. I mean, when you look at Anderson's history and you talk about, you know, the biggest fights, you know, first is probably Dan Henderson, because when Dan Henderson came over, he was the reigning Pride champion. So you had the reigning UFC champion against the reigning Pride champion. That was historical. Then you talk about, you know, the Vitor Belfort fight. And the Vitor Belfort fight, it was great and it was exciting at the time, but it was historical in that it really launched the modern boom in Brazil. And then you talk about the Chael Sonnen fights. And the Chael Sonnen, I mean, Chael was not the most talented fighter that Anderson fought, but, you know, those were big moments in history. So, you know, whereas Israel, you know, he's just starting his journey, man. Like I said, you know, you talk about John Jones, you talk about Anderson Silva, they dominated their weight classes, man. They had lengthy runs. And that's why I think we talk about them among the all-time greats. You know, if you think about a guy like Conor McGregor, love Conor McGregor, of course, popular figure, you know, biggest superstar in the history of the sport, no question about it. But when you talk about all-time greats, if you're talking to hardcores, his name probably doesn't come up, and that's no disrespect to his fighting ability, but you need lengthy runs to be an all-time great. You need to defend over and over and over and, you know, establish your dominance over a length of time. And so I think that Adesanya's run is just beginning. The skill, the ability, I mean, right now, if he called it a career, we'd always talk about him in terms of, man, he was a guy that had these incredible skills. But you need dominance, man. You need lengthy time of beating every contender out there. So in terms of skill, yeah, you can compare him alongside Anderson Silva. You can compare him alongside John Jones. But he just needs time and lengthy dominance before we start comparing him and saying, like, hey, he is one of the all-time greats.
John Morgan, real quick, did some of these cats already jump on a plane back to their homelands? Or is there a quarantine period after the fight?
No, some of them, man, I think the flight left yesterday at like 4 p.m. or something like that on Sunday. I mean, as you said, I'm ahead of you guys, so it's Monday right now. So, yeah, some of these people have already gone home. You know, some people are staying. Obviously, for instance, I know Brandon Royval was a guy that said, I'm staying for the next 2 weeks because I'm cornering some of my teammates. So, you know, some people have teammates, so they're sticking around. But as far as, like, you know, required to stay, no. They, you know, a lot of people went home already. It's intriguing because we're talking about Adesanya. New Zealand and I think Australia both have mandatory 14-day quarantine periods when you come home. So if you leave the country willingly and you come back, you've got to stay 14 days in a hotel where you mandatory quarantine, like away from your family and all that. So, yeah, some of those guys, all that City Kickboxing team, they're facing that. But yeah, some people left. So it's a And we get ready and we start again, man. And we're going to repeat this process, right? Like all the other the fighters for this next card will be coming out of quarantine later today. And we start interviewing them tomorrow. So it's going to be a crazy little 5-week run.
Guys, let's talk about Jan Blachowicz, the new UFC light heavyweight champion. He defeated Dominic Reyes, huge underdog in that fight. I mean, not an enormous underdog, but I think he was about a plus 200 to Dominic Reyes' minus 250. I don't want to say he made it look easy, but at times he did. He had to, you know, Reyes scored a little bit, but, you know, it was Blachowicz's night, man. He looked great. And let me say something real quick to a lot of fighters. I think about a few fighters like Rafael Dos Anjos, who came in, got beat up a little bit here and there, and then managed to turn things around and be a world champion. And here's an example of someone who hasn't become a world champion, but Kevin Lee. Remember when Kevin Lee was on his nice run? Now he's experienced a few losses, and he's got a couple injuries. Man, I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of fighters that should use Jan Blachowicz as an example of guys who come in, don't succeed at first, but all of a sudden you peel off a few in a row or you get on some sort of a run, and if you're peaking at the right time, look at Jan Blachowicz's career right now, how amazing it is. He took out a guy who arguably beat John Jones in his last fight, and he sent one guy to Bellator, you know what I mean? And I think he's won like now 7 of his last 8 or 8 of his last 9. And he's going to be, his life is going to completely change. He's a star now in Poland, joining Joanna Jędrzejczyk as undisputed UFC champions. I think he's got a kid on the way. I mean, what a great thing for such a nice guy.
Yeah, it's funny, man. As soon as he knocked Dominic Reyes out, you know, once the finish even called it, like the first thing I said was, good for him. Good for him. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's just a good dude. He's been grinding forever. You know, I hate to make the comparison to Michael Bisping, because I think Michael Bisping was a little more loved and a little more hated, to be honest. I think Jan Blachowicz has been kind of down the middle a little bit. You know what I mean? He's not a controversial figure. He's not a big outspoken figure. But, you know, as you said, you know, as you laid out, you know, somebody that got the success kind of later in their career. I mean, it's not that many years ago that he was on a stretch of 1-3 in the UFC. And you thought, oh, this guy kind of flamed out. You know what I mean? And now he was up there, and man, you know, seeing him smiling with that belt on the table at the post fight press conference, man, it was pretty cool to see. So I was happy for him. Listen, I think Dominic Reyes started out a little bit slow, a little bit flat. But the thing that occurred to me is that opening round was happening is, you know, because I picked Dominic Reyes coming into this fight. And when he wasn't quite as aggressive, when he wasn't moving quite as much, when he was a little more concerned about the counters, it was funny, like the old, you know, cliche styles make fights. It kind of dawned on me as I was watching that. I was like, oh, wait a minute. You can't fight Jan the same way you fight John Jones. Like, you know, when you fight John Jones, you're not scared that one shot will knock your lights out.
Correct.
I mean, no disrespect to John Jones.
Yep.
But I think Dominic Reyes was scared that if he caught a counter flush from Jan Blachowicz, he was going to go out cold. And I think that contributed to him starting a little bit slow, being a little bit tentative, that sort of thing. But the interesting part about it was, well, first of all, dude, that kick to the ribs, man, that mark that was on his ribs.
Yeah.
I don't know how that looked on TV, but in person, it was one of the grossest things I've ever seen, man. That looked so painful. So that was that. But as it was unfolding, it was funny because, you know, I had Jan up in the first two rounds, but, you know, as there was about a minute left in that third round, or in that second round, I should say, I started seeing Dominic open up a little bit, man. He landed a little counter, scored with an uppercut, you know, and I was like, okay, he's getting loose now. I'm like, oh, this third round is going to be real interesting. And then we didn't get to the third round. You know what I mean? So it was funny. I felt like Dominic Reyes was kind of coming into his own at that point. But Jan tagged him, broke his nose, put him down on the canvas, and that was that. So, you know, frustrating night for Dominic Reyes, to say the least. But, man, how can you not be happy for Jan Blachowicz, man? He's just he's a good dude, and this is a big moment for him. And I will say what was interesting is in the entire lead-up, both guys were like, stop talking to me about John Jones. Stop talking to me about John Jones. Yeah. You know, he left, and we're fighting for the title. And then what's the first thing that Jan does afterwards? He says, come on, John Jones. So I thought that was a little bit funny, man. I found that interesting. But he said, look, man, I didn't want to talk about him before the fight because I wasn't fighting him. But now, after the fight, yeah, let's talk. You promised me a fight. Let's go, John Jones. So, you know, of course, John Jones went to social media and started talking about his belt and blah, 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 blah. You knew that was coming. I mean, you knew 100% that was coming. So I'm kind of interested to see what John Jones does next. You know, is he going to do this heavyweight move or not? You know, I asked Dana White about it at the post-fight press conference. I was like, hey, so what is going on with John Jones? He just said, hey, man, you know as much as I do. I'm like, well, I don't think that's actually true. So what are you trying to say there? Like, is he not? So I'm not convinced that John's going to heavyweight at this point.
John, with no John Bones Jones in the picture, does this feel like it's a belt that's going to be passed around quite a bit? Or do you feel like Jan Blachowicz may have what it takes to string 3-4 fight title run defense?
No, I think it's probably one that bounces around a little bit if John doesn't come back, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, we were talking about all-time greatness and not a sign and all this. I mean, lengthy title runs are fun, right? Because you're talking about the greatness of one figure. But to me, the division is a lot more interesting when the belt bounces around a little bit, right? Like, you know, for instance, right now at women's flyweight or even at bantamweight, it's hard for me to get excited about contenders, right? Because I look at, I look at a fighter and I go, oh, man, look at this fighter. They're so good. They're exciting. Look at their skills. And then you go, Yeah, but they can't beat Valentina Shevchenko. So it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, but she's not going to be able to beat Amanda Nunes. And I think that was the whole thing at 205 for a long time. I mean, you see somebody come up, you know, you see a Corey Anderson, a Johnny Walker, a Misha Cirkunov, you know, whoever, you know, whatever name it is, you go, ooh, I like that. I like that. You're like, yeah, but not going to beat Jon Jones. So it's hard to really get excited, you know, whereas when it is, you know, and there's no disrespect to Jan Blachowicz. I'm not saying that he can't beat his contenders. He can. But it's more of a, you know, it's more of a contest. It's more of a, ooh, let's talk about this. How does that play out? Who wins here? You know, where you get these dominant champions, it's amazing to cover their runs, but it's hard to get excited about the rest of the division around them. So right now with Jon Jones gone, I think the division's a little bit more exciting because you can look at all these names and go, ooh, on any given Sunday, you know, or any given Saturday, somebody wins. And sometimes that parity makes it a little bit more exciting. Obviously, the NFL has built a brand off that.
Correct. And, you know, if he were to fight Thiago Santos, if Santos gets past Glover Teixeira, he'd probably be an underdog in that fight. That's the last guy to give him a loss. If he were to fight Rumble Johnson after that, he's got probably more power than Jan Blachowicz. Of course, we know if he fights Jon Jones. So, conceivably, he could still be an underdog, in depending on the matchup, in his first couple title defenses. But let's not take anything away from this guy. He had a great run, and he rose to the occasion at the right time, and he beat a quality number one ranked number one contender in Dominic Reyes.
No, I agree. And that was actually kind of a piece I wrote before the fight as well, where I said, listen, these guys do not deserve to live in Jon Jones' shadow. You know what I mean? Like, it's not their fault that Jon Jones decided to move on, decided to relinquish his belt. It's not a technicality, right? You know what I mean? Like, if Jon Jones is stripped because, you know, let's say he was, you know, had some kind of, I don't know, arrest or something like that, and so they stripped him, you know, whatever. You know, then you would say, oh, well, there's an asterisk next to that. Like, Jon Jones, you know, would have beaten him had he still had his title. No, Jon Jones willingly elected to give up his belt, and these guys fought for it, and they were the two right guys, the two top of the division. It's not like, you know, they took number one and put him against number 15, and the number one guy won. You go, well, did you really win? Come on, man. No, these are the top two guys in the division outside of Jon Jones, one who arguably beat Jon Jones. I scored the Reyes fight for Jones, but, you know, people can make that argument, and another guy who was right in line and should have had that next shot. So no asterisks for me in this fight, man. Jon Jones willingly walked away from his belt, and these are the top two guys in the division outside of him. Jan Blachowicz is a deserving champion.
All right, one more item before we let you go. The little spat that has become Conor McGregor and Dana White, I don't think it's anything that's not irreparable because they both make money for each other. But compare this to other times where they've kind of butted heads. What do you think's happening here? At the end of the day, he can't box Manny without Dana's approval, right?
Correct. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, these two guys, you know, they'll go at it. And I wish they'd just get in a room together because I'm sure they could work it out. I mean, this, you know, barking out on social media or press conferences, you know, one side, they're going to play each other in the media. And, you know, while it's great for clicks, so I won't argue with that, you know, we'll cover it all the way because people care. In terms of fighting, man, I'd love to see these two guys get together because, yeah, I mean, listen, the UFC owns Conor McGregor's promotional rights, so he can't just go out and fight without them involved. And I don't know, man, him boxing Manny Pacquiao, like, I get it from Conor's perspective, you know, that would be amazing. A, it would be a lot of money, I'm sure. B, it would be, you know, an honor for him to say, you know, when he's, you know, old and talking to his grandkids, and, you know, it's like, man, I fought Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, you know, I fought the two, I mean, that's cool. But let's be honest, man, I don't care about that fight at all. Like literally don't care about it at all. They could say, John, it's going to be at the UFC Apex, and they're only allowing one media member in. Do you want to go? And I could be like, well, I got something going on that day. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care, man. The first time around with Floyd Mayweather, it was such a wild, crazy, you know, freak show of our lifetime that I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, this is crazy. This is bizarre. You know, I knew Floyd would win, but I thought, well, I mean, to cover something like this is amazing. This is a once in a lifetime type thing. Him and Pacquiao, I just don't get it, man. I don't think there's interest in it. I'm sure there would be enough casual interest that it would make money, but man, I want to see Conor fighting MMA. If I'm being honest, man, I want to see him fighting in the UFC. what's going to happen? I don't know. I mean, listen, this COVID thing is a big part in this. You know, the live gates that Conor would generate, that's a ton of revenue, man, a ton of money that's not coming in. And I think that makes it a little bit more difficult for the UFC and trying to match him up and what's the biggest fight that makes sense and all that. So, look, it's a difficult position for everybody to be in. You know, Conor McGregor is to a point now where only the biggest fights make sense. I mean, man, him insisting on fighting Diego Sanchez, like, oh, man, I got love for Diego Sanchez, man. That dude is a legend of the game. But I just don't understand the interest. I don't understand the intrigue in that matchup. I don't get it. So, man, I feel like right now Conor and Dana are on, like, different planets talking about this stuff. But hopefully they'll get together because, you know, hashing it out in the media, hashing it out on social media, that's not going to get it done, man. They got to get together, get in the same room and figure something out.
John, listen, man, we can talk to you all night. You definitely have your finger on the pulse of the game. So if your schedule's clear, man, we'd love to just have you right back on Thursday and cover some of those other news stories that are out there. So you just let us know if that works out for you. We definitely would want to hook up again.
Yeah, man, there ain't nothing to do out here, bro. I'm just sitting in my hotel room. So, you know, the hours are a little bit weird, the timing of the schedule, the day's a little bit weird. But obviously, man, all we're doing is talking MMA anyway. So happy to do it with you boys.
Okay. All right, my man. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon. Well, you could tell he was happy to take our call, man. He's been through a lot, and he just covered the fights, but there's just all these new storylines, goes. You know what I mean? All these things that we didn't think would happen did happen, and he was cage-sized, so it was good to get his thoughts.
The sleep schedule's got to be horrific for him. Mm-hmm. To just have to go through that every day and then can you imagine you finally get some sleep and you got to knock on the door? Hey, we want to see if you have COVID. And just turn around and go, have you noticed nobody else on this island's got it? Leave me alone.
That's his version of the USADA test, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wake up, Mr. Morgan. You got to get your test. Yeah. All right, folks. Give him a follow on Twitter, and that's at MMA Junkie John. And he's got his Patreon show as well, the MMA Road Show with John Morgan. That's him and Cold Coffee. Ken Hathaway, our videographer. Look, the only other things left here is to just go down the row here. Brandon Royval defeated Kai Kara-France, guillotine choke. Huge win for Royval. He beat Tim Elliott and Kai Kara-France. Those are two tough guys. Two guys from the reality show who, remember, everybody on the reality show was a champion somewhere. Remember, they all came in with their belts? Mm-hmm. And Tim Elliott was the one that beat the whole field, but then lost to Demetrius Johnson. But still, they've been around, and now Royval's beaten them both in the last 4 months or whatever. So huge moves for Royval. And get this, Royval's looked good in doing it. He's finished both guys. I wouldn't put him past Brandon Moreno or Alex Perez. Definitely not Cody Garbrandt. Obviously, the UFC's got Cody Garbrandt facing Davison Figueroa. And I still don't even put him ahead of Joseph Benavidez. But still, that makes him a top six guy or top seven guy. So that's huge because he just came over from LFA recently.
I'm glad you said good because I've been contemplating whether to say good or great. But we can't forget that Kai Kara-France dropped him pretty bad, hit him with some solid shots, and had it not been for that spinning back elbow, that could have been the end of the fight.
Could have been,
right? So we don't know.
Cost me some money too.
Man. But yeah, me too. But he came back and he looked very – it was a very impressive performance, I think.
Yeah. Ketlin Vera defeated Sajara Eubanks 29-28 on all the judges' scorecards. Hakeem Dawodu defeated Zubara Tukagov. Split decision there. You know, both of those guys had an opportunity, just like Kai Kara-France's and Brandon Royval, to raise their stock. And Dawodu gets the win. So he gets his hand raised. He gets an extra check. But that's about it. I don't know that the stock went up too much.
No.
It was just one of those fights that didn't kick off the pay-per-view like we thought it was going to. And look, the kid, I think, is 5-0 in the UFC and like 12-1-1 overall. It's just nobody's talking about him enough. And there's a reason why, and it's just because they need to just get a little busier, man. What can I say?
The first fight of the night, what the UFC is looking for is what they got out of Royval and Kai Kara-France. Yeah. That's what they want at that first fight, and they definitely didn't get it in this one. It wasn't a horrible fight. It just wasn't a great fight.
Yeah. Brad Riddell defeated Alex Da Silva Coelho. That was the main event of the prelims on ESPN. Jake Matthews defeated Diego Sanchez. Yeah, it was a good fight, definitely. You're right. And then with Jake Matthews and Diego Sanchez, it was just one-sided. And, of course, we ask ourselves this question every single time, it seems as of late, when one of those veterans that's been in the sport for at least 10 to 15 years and has made that walk down the aisle at least 20 times, last week Cerrone and Woodley, this week Sanchez, should they continue fighting? I pose that to you, guys.
Man, Diego is competitive, but he's not going to win a belt anytime soon. He's not going to come anywhere near that. So really, when you think about the amount of money he's probably getting paid to put on these fights, I still get excited to see him. It's just, if I'm Dana White, I'm having that conversation with him. But I'm also okay with him saying, okay, I see that I probably need to go now, but I would like to go out in this fashion. And I think he's earned the ability to pick in which fashion he goes out. And one that I think he deserves is one more fight. And I'm a big proponent of, like, for me, seeing Daniel Cormier retire to no fans was heartbreaking. It really was. Not being able to lay your gloves down, all that stuff. I want Diego to get that because Diego represents so many things in our sport. I mean, hell, you could almost say we don't have a job without a guy like that, right? What that first season of Tough did. So he deserves a round of applause. And I would like to see him get one more fight, but I would really love to see him do it in front of an audience.
Goes, what about someone like, I think I can use this as an example. I think Cristiano Ronaldo played his last game in Champions League, which wasn't at Old Trafford. So he never really got to play, I guess, his own final game, which was a loss at Old Trafford. Could they just bring back Diego Sanchez to a round of applause, bring him into the middle of an octagon in between fights and honor him?
He'll probably get that with Hall of Fame.
Could they just write him a check for 500 grand, like a retirement check?
You'd be okay with it.
Well, I'm saying, like, are these fighters sticking around because they're like, oh, I'm finally making 150 and 150. If I can just do three more, that's my kids' college fund. I pay off my house. I catch up on my taxes.
100%. You know,
and then they're sitting there telling us, I still got the competitive juices. When in reality, man, if they could just get some sort of a farewell in that regard, they could be spared brain cells and the promotion wouldn't have to answer the fact that, you know, in a few years, hey, some of your fighters aren't doing well.
Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, right? Like look at guys like Dan Henderson and Michael Bisping and what they probably were able to do at the end of their career. Every one of those fights could represent, I mean, Dan lives in a nice little ranch, right? He's got nice little toys there. Mm-hmm. He's got his own gym that is like half gym, half restaurant.
Did he grab another wine bar and restaurant? Did he finish that?
I don't know if it's finished, but I mean, all that probably represents, he could probably point at some of those last fights that we all said, I don't know, Dan, if this is still the old Dan Henderson that we
grew up watching. And maybe one day he can say to his kids what Randy Couture did to Ryan Couture and say, this is for you.
Yeah. Okay. So it could represent something like that.
However, our dear friend Don Fry, man, that guy's been moving around trying to catch a break. He just wasn't a part of this era. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, I'm not trying to turn this into the whole, exactly, he needed a GoFundMe just to get his hip replacement. And I'm not trying to turn this into a whole, which we all know the fighters do need some sort of a retirement fund. But I wonder if all this just boils down to that.
I think it can. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got to figure that out. Okay. Let me continue down this card here. We'll go a little bit faster. Look, you all know the results. I'm sure maybe we can touch on it. On Wednesday, if we feel like there's some residual still from the fight card that took place this past Saturday. Ketlen Vera defeated Sergeant... I already said that, excuse me. We're already at Luthvold Klein defeated Shane Young. William Knight defeated Alexa Kamer. Juan Espino Diepa defeated Jeff Hughes. And Danilo Marquez defeated Kadis Ibrahimov. There you go. The bonuses were as follows. Brandon Royval, excuse me, versus Kai Kara France. That was your fight of the night. Israel Adesanya versus Jan Blachowicz. That was your performance of the night. I would say that's pretty good. I thought Riddell and Da Silva might say, well, we kind of thought we had fight of the night, but
it was a decent fight.
But you know, Kai Kara France and Royval was a high-speed car crash, mm-hmm. even though it didn't go the whole 15 minutes. And then as far as Adesanya and Blachowicz, the Klein KO was nice. The scarf hold choke by Espino was nice. But, I mean, Israel Adesanya knocked out an undefeated guy, a clear number two. Blachowicz finished a clear number one because Reyes came in ranked number one. So maybe there's really not much of an argument there.
Yeah, no, that's not too bad.
Yeah. All right, folks. That's kind of it for today. Hopefully you enjoyed the time there with John Morgan, one of the best in the business. And don't forget to catch us on Spinning Backlick. I think there'll be a rankings report this week. With John's spotty internet, maybe Goes or Simon will host the rankings report, but I'd like to get one out. I'm sure there'll be a few things to look at, especially pound for pound, because I imagine Izzy will climb. That's yet another title defense against another pound for pound fighter, or yeah, somebody that's in the pound for pound ranking. So I foresee some movement there. Follow Goes on Twitter and Instagram at the Goes. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MMA Junkie George, and follow the radio show on Twitter and Instagram at MMA Junkie Radio. Don't forget, on Wednesdays, we are still on Sportscaster Live. So it's just like this, except a little bit longer. And you can see our mugs on video if you go to our Sportscaster channel, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. And we usually have a guest, and we're working on a couple cool ones for this week. With that, we bid you adieu. Have a nice day. Have a nice week. Go out there and be a champion.